Now we can see a new world coming into view. A world in which there is the very real prospect of a new world order.
The new world order does not mean surrendering our national sovereignty or forfeiting our interests.
Convince you when your ears refuse to hear. You turn your heart away from me each time when I draw near. Your eyes refuse to meet with mine. They glance away in fear, as if you should not look at your reflection in the mirror. How can I explain to you when you won't understand? You scoff me and you mock me and reject the truth at hand. You spread your vicious rumors all across this troubled land. You willfully and knowingly transgress from his command. Your mind has been made and ruled by people you don't know. Thought machines control the scene so well it doesn't show. How can I contain this anguish and this pain, knowing that your eyes are blinded by the lies? Have your eyes been blinded by the lies? Have your eyes been blinded by the lies? Yes, your eyes are blinded by the lies. Yes, your eyes are blinded by the lies. Every time I think about the damage that's been done, the anger wells inside me till I'm almost overcome. I want to tear the moon out of the sky and drop the sun. Why do I feel so all alone, like I'm the only one? Even though your eyes are open, they may never ever see. Your mind may never comprehend this sinful subtlety. Your heart may never hunger for the truth that sets you free. Your soul may know the darkness of divine eternity. Like petty thieves who plunder in the shadows of the night, they break inside and enter through the windows of your mind. How can I control this poisoning of the soul? These lies that blind your eyes, blinded by the lies. Have your eyes been blinded by the lies? Have your eyes been blinded by the lies? Yes, your eyes are blinded by the lies. Yes, your eyes are blinded by the lies. Your mind has been made up for you by people you don't know, whose thought machine controls the scene so well it doesn't show. How can I contain this anguish and this pain, knowing that your eyes are blinded by the lies? Have your eyes been blinded by the lies? Have your eyes been blinded by the lies? Yes, your eyes are blinded by the lies. Yes, your eyes are blinded by the lies. Have your eyes been blinded by the lies? Yes, your eyes are blinded by the lies.
Well, boys and girls, happy for the first of the year. How about that? Here we go with another one, another hot one. It's going to be wilder than the one last one. I don't know how it could be much wilder, but it's going to be. And that was the great Carl Klang, a revolutionary singer. He's been around for years. He created a lot of music back in the 80s. about Gordon Call and all the heroes. Yeah, he did. Okay, look, let's get started right here because this is January. And it's January the 2nd. And we got a lot of birthdays to talk about here. The great Gordon Call, who gave his life for what he believed in, shot down and burned alive. That was on the 8th of January. Ethan Allen, soldier born in 1738, a revolutionary. Jack London was born on the 12th, 1876. One of the great white racists of all times. Robert J. Matthews was born on the 16th, 1953. Ben Franklin was born on White Separatist Day on the 17th. Noah Webster was born in 1782 on the 18th. And John Sanger, who was a hero up in the Northwest, holding off the government as they shot him down and murdered him in his front yard for defending the right to educate his own kids in home school, on the 19th. And our good friend James Earl Ray was born on the 20th of January. Dorothy Miles, the great wife of Robert Miles, was born on the 24th. And Robert Miles was born on the 28th, 1925, along with Stonewall Jackson. And the Daughters of the American Revolution were founded in 1797, on the 30th of January. And we had White History Week this in January, too. So this is quite a month, I'll tell you. A lot of stuff going on here. And on the back of this January page, we've got about 50 various National Socialists. I can't take the time to read them all now, but they were National Socialists and Cossacks and all kinds of people. Yeah, there must have been, I'd say, about 50 of them on here. So January was a very popular day for historical heroes to be born. Well, let's start off by underlying how rotten Washington was, is, and is going to be for quite some time. And don't think Donald Trump is going to clean it up. Sorry, boys and girls. I know you say that guy, he's a cynic, he's a pessimist, but I'm going to tell you, I'm usually right, and I don't mean right politically or left politically. I'm usually nail the tail on the donkey, and I know where to find the stuff. So let's listen to this to reaffirm for the new year how rotten Washington is.
The United States government is creating a new $160 million bureaucracy to shut down information that doesn't conform to the United States propaganda narratives, building on the strategy that sold the bloody Syrian regime change war, writes Rick Sterling. By Rick Sterling, the United States establishment is not content simply to have domination over the media narratives on critical foreign policy issues, such as Syria, Ukraine, and issues, such as Syria, Ukraine, and is not content simply to have domination over the media narratives on critical foreign policy issues, such as Syria, Ukraine, and Russia. It wants total domination. Thus we now have the Countering Foreign Propaganda and Disinformation Act that President Obama signed into law on December 23 as part of the National Defense Authorization Act for 2017, setting aside $160 million to combat any propaganda that challenges official Washington's version of reality. Samantha Power, permanent representative of the United States to the UN, addresses the Security Council meeting on Syria, September 25, 2016. Power has been an advocate for escalating the United States military involvement in Syria. UN photo. The new law mandates that the United States Secretary of State to collaborate with the Secretary of Defense, Director of National Intelligence and other federal agencies to create a global engagement center to lead, synchronize, and coordinate efforts of the federal government to recognize, understand, expose, and counter foreign state and non-state propaganda and disinformation efforts aimed at undermining United States national security interests. The law directs the center to be formed in 180 days and to share expertise among agencies and to coordinate with allied nations. The legislation was initiated in March 2016, as the demonization of Russian President Vladimir Putin in Russia was already underway and was enacted amid the allegations of Russian hacking around the United States presidential election and the mainstream media's furor over supposedly fake news. Defeated Democratic presidential nominee Hillary Clinton voiced strong support for the bill. It's imperative that leaders in both the private sector and the public sector step up to protect our democracy and innocent lives. The new law is remarkable for a number of reasons, not the least because it merges a new McCarthyism about purported dissemination of Russian propaganda on the internet with a new Orwellianism by creating a kind of Ministry of Truth or Global Engagement Center to protect the American people from foreign propaganda and disinformation. As part of the effort to detect and defeat these unwanted narratives, the law authorizes the center to facilitate the use of a wide range of technologies and techniques by sharing expertise among federal departments and agencies, seeking expertise from external sources, and implementing best practices. This section is an apparent reference to proposals that Google, Facebook, and other technology companies find ways to block or brand certain internet sites as purveyors of Russian propaganda or fake news. Justifying this new bureaucracy, the bill's sponsors argued that the existing agencies for strategic communications and public diplomacy were not enough, that the information threat required a whole-of-government approach leveraging all elements of national power. The law also is rife with irony since the United States government and related agencies are among the world's biggest purveyors of propaganda and disinformation or what you might call evidence-free claims, such as the recent accusations of Russia hacking into Democratic emails to influence the United States election. Despite these accusations leaked by the Obama administration and embraced as true by the mainstream the United States news media, there is little or no public evidence to support the charges. There is also a contradictory analysis by veteran the United States intelligence professionals as well as statements by WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange and an associate, former British Ambassador Craig Murray, that the Russians were not the source of the leaks. Yet, the mainstream the United States media has virtually ignored this counter-evidence, appearing eager to collaborate with the new Global Engagement Center even before it is officially formed. Of course, there is a long history of the United States disinformation and propaganda. Former CIA agents Philippa G. and John Stockwell documented how it was done decades ago, secretly planting black propaganda and covertly funding media outlets to influence events around the world, with much of the fake news blowing back into the American media. In more recent decades, that the United States government has adopted an Internet-era version of that formula with an emphasis on having the State Department or the U.S.-funded National Endowment for Democracy supply, train, and pay activists and citizen journalists to create and distribute propaganda and false stories via social media and via contacts with the mainstream media. The United States government's strategy also seeks to undermine and discredit journalists who challenge this orthodoxy. The new legislation escalates this information war by tossing another $160 million into the pot. Propaganda and disinformation on Syria is a good case study in the modern application of information warfare. In her memoir Hard Choices, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton wrote that the United States provided support for Syrian civilian opposition groups, including satellite-linked computers, telephones, cameras, and training for more than 1,000 activists, students, and independent journalists. A heart-rending propaganda image designed to justify a major the United States military operation inside Syria against the Syrian military. Indeed, a huge amount of money has gone to activists and civil society groups in Syria and other countries that have been targeted for regime change. A lot of the money also goes to parent organizations that are based in the United States and Europe. So these efforts do not only support on-the-ground efforts to undermine the targeted countries, but perhaps even more importantly, the money influences and manipulates public opinion in the West. In North America, representatives from the Syrian Local Coordination Committees, LCC, were frequent guests on popular media programs such as Democracy Now! The message was clear. There is a revolution in Syria against a brutal regime personified in Bashar al-Assad. It was not mentioned that the local coordination committees have been primarily funded by the West, specifically the Office for Syrian Opposition Support, which was founded by the United States State Department and the UK Foreign and Commonwealth Office. More recently, news and analysis about Syria has been conveyed through the filter of the White Helmets, also known as Syrian Civil Defense. In the Western news media, the White Helmets are described as neutral, nonpartisan, civilian volunteers courageously carrying out rescue work in the war zone. In fact, the group is none of the above. It was initiated by the United States and UK using a British military contractor and Brooklyn-based marketing company. While they may have performed some genuine rescue operations, the White Helmets are primarily a media organization with a political goal, to promote NATO intervention in Syria. The manipulation of public opinion using the White Helmets and promoted by the New York Times in a Avaaz petition for a no-fly zone in Syria is documented here. The White Helmets hoax continues to be widely believed and receives uncritical promotion, though it has increasingly been exposed at alternative media outlets as the creation of a shady PR firm. During critical times in the conflict in Aleppo, White Helmet individuals have been used as the source for important news stories despite a track record of deception. Recent propaganda, blatant lies. As the armed groups in East Aleppo recently lost ground and then collapsed, Western governments and allied media went into a frenzy of accusations against Syria and Russia based on reports from sources connected with the armed opposition. CNN host Wolf Blitzer described Aleppo as falling in a slaughter of these women and children, while CNN host Jake Tapper referred to genocide by another name. War damage in the once thriving Syrian city of Aleppo. The Daily Beast published the claims of the Aleppo Siege Media Center under the title Doomsday is Held in Aleppo and amid accusations that the Syrian army was executing civilians,
burning them alive, and 20 women committed suicide in order not to be raped. These sensational claims were widely broadcast without verification. However, this news on CNN and throughout Western media came from highly biased sources, and many of the claims lacking anything approaching independent corroboration could be accurately described as propaganda and disinformation. Ironically, some of the supposedly Russian propaganda sites, such as RT, have provided first-hand on-the-ground reporting from the war zones with verifiable information that contradicts the Western narrative and thus has received almost no attention in the United States news media. For instance, some of these non-Western outlets have shown videos of popular celebrations over the liberation of Aleppo. There has been further corroboration of these realities from peace activists, such as Jan Oberg of Transnational Foundation for Peace and Future Research, who published a photo essay of his eyewitness observations in Aleppo, including the happiness of civilians from East Aleppo reaching the government-controlled areas of West Aleppo, finally freed from areas that had been controlled by Al-Qaeda's Syrian affiliate and its jihadist allies in Arar al-Sham. Dr. Nabil Antaki, a medical doctor from Aleppo, described the liberation of Aleppo in an interview titled "Aleppo is Celebrating, Free from Terrorists, the Western Media Misinformed." The first Christmas celebrations in Aleppo in 4 years are shown here, replete with marching band members in Santa Claus outfits. Journalist Vanessa Bealey has published testimonies of civilians from East Aleppo. The happiness of civilians at their liberation is clear. Whether or not you wish to accept these depictions of the reality in Aleppo, at a minimum, they reflect another side of the story that you have been denied while being persistently force-fed the version favored by the United States State Department. The goal of the new Global Engagement Center to counter foreign propaganda is to ensure that you never get to hear this alternative narrative to the Western propaganda line. Even much earlier, contrary to the Western mythology of rebel-liberated zones, there was strong evidence that the armed groups were never popular in Aleppo. American journalist James Foley described the situation in 2012 like this. Journalist James Foley, shortly before he was executed by an Islamic State operative. Aleppo, a city of about 3 million people, was once the financial heart of Syria. As it continues to deteriorate, many civilians here are losing patience with the increasingly violent and unrecognizable opposition, one that is hampered by infighting and a lack of structure, and deeply infiltrated by both foreign fighters and terrorist groups. The rebels in Aleppo are predominantly from the countryside, further alienating them from the urban crowd that once lived here peacefully, in relative economic comfort and with little interference from the authoritarian government of President Bashar al-Assad. On November 22, 2012, Foley was kidnapped in northwestern Syria and held by Islamic State terrorists before his beheading in August 2014. The overall narrative on Syria analysis of the Syrian conflict boils down to two competing narratives. One narrative is that the conflict is a fight for freedom and democracy against a brutal regime, a storyline promoted in the West and the Gulf states, which have been fueling the conflict from the start. This narrative is also favored by some self-styled anti-imperialists who want a Syrian revolution. The other narrative is that the conflict is essentially a war of aggression against a sovereign state, with the aggressors including NATO countries, Gulf monarchies, Israel, and Jordan. Domination of the Western media by these powerful interests is so thorough that one almost never gets access to this second narrative, which is essentially banned from not only the mainstream but also much of the liberal and progressive media. For example, listeners and viewers of the generally progressive TV and radio program Democracy Now! Have rarely, if ever, heard the second narrative described in any detail. Instead, the program frequently broadcasts the statements of Hillary Clinton, the United States Ambassador to the United Nations Samantha Power, and others associated with the United States position. Rarely do you hear the viewpoint of the Syrian Ambassador to the United Nations, the Syrian Foreign Minister, or analysts inside Syria and around the world who have written about and follow events there closely. Democracy Now! Also has done repeated interviews with proponents of the Syrian revolution while ignoring analysts who call the conflict a war of aggression sponsored by the West and the Gulf monarchies. This blackout of the second narrative continues despite the fact that many prominent international figures see it as such. For example, the former foreign minister of Nicaragua and former president of the UN General Assembly, Father Miguel Descoto, has said, "What the United States government is doing in Syria is tantamount to a war of aggression, which, according to the Nuremberg Tribunal, is the worst possible crime a state can commit against another state." In many areas of politics, Democracy Now! Is excellent and challenges mainstream media. However, in this area, coverage of the Syrian conflict, the broadcast is biased, one-sided, and echoes the news and analysis of mainstream Western corporate media, showing the extent of control over foreign policy news that already exists in the United States and Europe. Suppressing and censoring challenges despite the widespread censorship of alternative analyses on Syria and other foreign hotspots that already exists in the West, the United States government's new Global Engagement Center will seek to ensure that the censorship is even more complete, with its goal to counter foreign state and non-state propaganda and disinformation. We can expect even more aggressive and better financed assaults on the few voices daring to challenge the West's groupthink smear campaigns that are already quite extensive. The White Helmet's symbol, expropriating the name of Syria Civil Defense. In an article titled "Controlling the Narrative on Syria," Louis Alday describes the criticisms and attacks on journalists Rania Kulik and Max Blumenthal for straying from the approved Western narrative on Syria. Some of the bullying and abuse has come from precisely those people, such as Robin Yassin Kassab, who have been frequent guests in liberal Western media. Reporters who have returned from Syria with accounts that challenge the propaganda themes that have permeated the Western media also have come under attack. For instance, Canadian journalist Eva Bartlett recently returned to North America after being in Syria and Aleppo, conveying a very different image and critical of the West's biased media coverage. Bartlett appeared at a United Nations press conference and then did numerous interviews across the country during a speaking tour. During the course of her talks and presentation, Bartlett criticized the White Helmets and questioned whether it was true that Al-Quds Hospital in opposition-held East Aleppo was attacked and destroyed as claimed. Bartlett's recounting of this information made her a target of Snopes, which has been a mostly useful website exposing urban legends and false rumors but has come under criticism itself for some internal challenges and has been inconsistent in its investigations. In one report entitled "White Helmet Hearsay," Snopes writer Bethania Palmer says claims the White Helmets are linked to terrorists is unproven, but she overlooks numerous videos, photos, and other reports showing White Helmet members celebrating a Nusra/Al-Qaeda battle victory, picking up the bodies of civilians executed by a Nusra executioner, and having a member who alternatively appears as a rebel/terrorist fighter with a weapon and later wearing a White Helmet uniform. The fact check barely scrapes the surface of public evidence. The same writer did another shallow investigation titled Victim Blaming regarding Bartlett's critique of white helmet videos and what happened at the Al-Quds Hospital in Aleppo. Bartlett suggests that some white helmet videos may be fabricated and may feature the same child at different times, that is, photographs that appear to show the same girl being rescued by white helmet workers at different places and times. While it is uncertain whether this is the same girl, the similarity is clear. The Snopes writer goes on to criticize Bartlett for her comments about the reported bombing of Al-Quds Hospital in East Aleppo in April 2016. A statement at the website of Doctors Without Borders says the building was destroyed and reduced to rubble, but this was clearly false since photos show the building with unclear damage. 5 months later, the September 2016 report by Doctors Without Borders says the top two floors of the building were destroyed and the ground floor emergency room damaged, yet they reopened in 2 weeks. The many inconsistencies and contradictions in the statements of Doctors Without Borders resulted in an open letter to them. In their last report, Doctors Without Borders, known by its French initials, MSF, acknowledges that MSF staff did not directly witness the attack and has not visited Al-Quds Hospital since 2014. Bartlett referenced satellite images taken before and after the reported attack on the hospital. The images do not show severe damage, and it is unclear whether or not there is any damage to the roof, the basis for Bartlett's statement. In the past week, independent journalists have visited the scene of Al-Quds Hospital and report that the top floors of the building are still there and damage is unclear. The Snopes investigation criticizing Bartlett was superficial and ignored the broader issues of accuracy and integrity in the Western media's depiction of the Syrian conflict. Instead, the article appeared to be an effort to discredit the eyewitness observations and analysis of a journalist who dared challenge the mainstream narrative. The United States propaganda and disinformation on Syria has been extremely effective in misleading much of the American population. Thus, most Americans are unaware how many billions of taxpayer dollars have been spent on yet another regime change project. The propaganda campaign, having learned from the successful demonizations of Iraq's Saddam Hussein, Libya's Muammar Gaddafi and other targeted leaders, has been so masterful regarding Syria that many liberal and progressive news outlets were pulled in. It has been left to RT and some internet outlets to challenge the United States government and the mainstream media. But the United States government's near total control of the message doesn't appear to be enough. Apparently, even a few voices of dissent are a few voices too many. The enactment of H.R. 5181, Countering Foreign Propaganda and Disinformation, suggests that the ruling powers seek to escalate suppression of news and analyses that run counter to the official narrative. Backed by a new infusion of $160 million, the plan is to further squelch skeptical voices with Operation for Countering and Refuting what the United States government deems to be propaganda and disinformation. As part of the $160 million package, funds can be used to hire or reward civil society groups, media content providers, non-governmental organizations, federally funded research and development centers, private companies, or academic institutions. Among the tasks that these private entities can be hired to perform is to identify and investigate both print and online sources of news that are deemed to be distributing disinformation, misinformation, and propaganda directed at the United States and its allies and partners. In other words, we are about to see an escalation of the information war. Rick Sterling is an independent investigative journalist. He lives in the San Francisco Bay Area and can be reached at rsterling1@gmail.com. Him.
I'm going to try to set up with the webmaster a special section on our website with the audio version of these news programs and information that I'm downloading off the internet instead of just sending them out in script form. And I think it would be a good idea to do that, and so we're going to work on that. And so, and also I told you I was going to send you this stuff out separate. I forgot and sent it out the whole thing today, but it's stuff, this is like going to school, boys and girls. This is like going to Lone Wolf University. You got to be listening to this stuff and analyzing this stuff, you know. There's no worse swamp to be drained than the United States State Department and the corporate press. Now, if you would have any linkage or effect with Donald Trump, which I don't think any of us will, you would be promoting the fact to drain the swamp of the United States State Department. It is the most corrupt, treasonous, criminal institution in Washington. And it works directly with its co-conspirators in the U.S. corporate press. And that's where a giant amount of our problem, in fact, everybody's problem, comes from. Okay, let's go on with something else. Incidentally, I got a nice note here from Stray Dog. Happy solstice. I've been in the woods for 77 hours the last 3 weeks looking for doe deer meat. It's not easy, and with a musket, you get only one shot. Rest training in the world. Best training in the world. Good to hear your voice, TT. Another good year. I built many things this year. With admiration, Stray Dog. I saw Mel. He spent 77 hours out in the woods tracking deer with a musket rifle. Oh, jeez. I like to have lone wolves like that. These guys are really something. You know, it might not hurt to take these MP3s of these kind of articles that pin the tail on the donkey and the elephant and send them to your congressman and senator. I know, they're a bunch of rotten, corrupt bastards, but maybe one might get through. I think it might be a good thing to do, to try it anyhow. See, as long as they assume we're stupid, they're going to do exactly what they've always done. But if they begin to see the information we're sending is highly probable and possible and knowable, they might say, we better start doing something about this, because these guys are not playing the old Hollywood Klan and the Hollywood Nazi stuff. These guys know what's going on, and they're letting us know that they know, and I think we better pay attention to them. It's worth a try. I'm going to send along to you a piece of information supplied by Stray Dog. It has to do with flying saucers and so forth like that. And I know you've watched a million of them, so have I. And most of it is nonsense. But I remember back when I read my first book about the Nazi UFO that James K. Warner published. He made quite a bit of money off that. And I've never been able to ascertain how truthful it is or not. But I'm going to send you this Russian program. You can read the stuff in English underneath. And see how it, what you think of it. So here goes. That story reminds me of some of the research I did on some of the other alleged weapons the Third Reich had put together. And sort of hidden in that information is the research on the atomic bomb. And they show the place where they say that they were working on the atomic bomb. But they also say that they quit working on the atomic bomb. I mean, long before the end of the war. The question in my mind has always been, why? Were they working on something better, or were they just upset with the idea of dropping atomic bombs on white people? I think they were probably diverted into something else, and it may have been this magnetic aircraft stuff. I don't know if you've looked into it. I've looked into it as much as possible, but that was a real mystery, because they had started research on the atomic bomb real early, and they had a big place where they were putting it together, and it was abandoned long before the end of the war. That's a question I really would like to have the answer for.
We're facing pressure to bring the city's rising violence under control. More than 4,300 people have been shot this year, and there have been more than 750 homicides, the worst numbers in two decades. 60 Minutes spent a week in Chicago looking for answers. Here's a preview of Bill Whitaker's report.
We were astonished by data we obtained from inside the police department. It revealed that as killings rose, police activity fell. In August of 2015, cops stopped and questioned 49,257 people. A year later, those stops dropped to 8,859, down 80%. At the same time, arrests were off by a third, from just over 10,000 to 6,900.
You talk to cops every day.
Me too.
What's the morale?
Lowest it's ever been.
Brian Warner is a former Chicago cop. He was shot in 2011. Now, Warner counsels officers suffering from extreme stress. He explained what a dozen beat cops told us off camera. They had stepped back.
You have a 911 call, you go to your 911 call. But if you want an aggressive patrol, when you're out looking for people breaking the law, that's not happening as much as it was.
But you say they're not being as proactive.
No, they're not. And how could you ask them to be, and why would you expect them to be?
Because it's their job. they signed on to do that.
It's my job to go to work and listen to your 911 calls and respond to my 911. That's the basic ability of my job. So if you want me to do the basics, that's what I'm doing now.
The police activity is horrific, honestly, and it's not an excuse that can be made in my book.
We showed the stop and arrest data that we got to Gary McCarthy. He was superintendent of the Chicago Police Department until just a year ago.
When you have activity falling off the way it is and crime skyrocketing, that's a huge problem.
Some people looking at the Chicago Police Department have said it's in crisis.
Crisis is a good word. When people are dying, yes, there's crisis. No two ways about it.
You can see Bill's full report Sunday night on 60 Minutes.
Well, is it time for RoboCop in Chicago? Well, of course, it's long past RoboCop time. If you were to interview cops that I knew back in the 60s and even the 50s, they would look at this and scratch their head. What the hell's going on? What's the matter with this deal? They're not going after these Negroes. They're not going after... Now, admittedly, there's plenty of white people killing people, too, but not to the rate that these percentage that the Negroes are. So, as long as you won't accept the facts and what's going on and the root cause, you're never going to solve the problem. And these white cops know it. They know it. And the only reason most of them are staying on as cops is they need a job. I think it's time they should have some blue flu and just stay home for a week. Can you imagine what that would be like? Yeah, well, everybody's in denial. In denial. Negroes are wonderful people. They never do anything wrong. And, you're just picking on them and all that kind of stuff. And it's horrible. We got to give them more. We got to bend over backwards. We got to grab our ankles and say, come on, baby. As long as you got that attitude, and no hardcore attitude, things are going to get worse. Yeah, that's what I would call chaos factor. And since that nobody wants to accept the truth and deal with the truth, then I don't care. They deserve the chaos factor. And for white people to go out there as vigilantes or something is a waste of time. For Hollywood Nazis and Hollywood Klansmen to march around and bitch about it is a waste of time. Just have to wait till it becomes absolutely beyond any comprehension. And you mow these people down in the street when they become overt or pull a gun. Just one in the head, one in the heart. It's simple. But looks like it's going to be quite a long time coming. Remember that movie, Escape from New York? Well, I think that's where we're headed as far as Chicago's concerned. I no longer sympathize with white people that won't accept what the problem is and know simply what the solution to the problem is. How can you sympathize with people who deny, are continually in denial, you know, like I put on Twitter, which you should check my Twitter, I put new tweets out every day, like Donald Trump. Yeah. When I say, make your choice between white supremacy and white degradation, deterioration, you'll have it one way or the other. Either white supremacy or de-evolution and so forth. There's no in-between. Sorry, you got all these la-la people out there want to take care of it with kindness and love and affection, which is bullshit. It ain't happening. If it ain't happening, you got to do something else. Murders spike as Chicago cops are accused of racism. Well, I hope they are. They better get a lot more racist or they're going to die. Stops decrease by 80%. Cops are saying blue flu. I'm not going to risk my life for you dumb bastards. And I agree with them. 100% on that. See, on the web, they're still going on and on about Donald Trump and 24 photos about Donald Trump that will change your mind, which evidently is exposing the fact that he grabbed a hold of women and kissed them and stuff. So what? If the women don't like it, they should clobber him. I mean, you know, women can do that. A lot of women are stronger than hell. If they don't like to be fondled by Donald or anybody else, just haul off and smack him. Case closed, as far as I'm concerned. Otherwise, keep your mouth shut. Former Chicago superintendent of police, Gary McCarthy, said Sunday that the Black Lives Matter movement was ultimately responsible for rising crime rates in his city. You should have said nigger crime rates. And nationally, because it was making it harder for police to do their jobs. Oh, wow. Just a second here. McCarthy said the movement was responsible for a rise in noncompliance, people refusing to cooperate or surrender to police. What is happening is, and this is ironic, that a movement with the goal of saving black lives is, at this point, is getting black lives taken because 80% of our murder victims here in Chicago are male blacks, Negroes, niggers, porch monkeys, McCarthy told New York radio talk show host John Katsimatis. McCarthy was superintendent at the time of the 2014 death of Laquan McDonald, a 17-year-old who was shot by police. Dashboard camera footage of McDonald's death contradicted the officers' accounts of the incident, which contended that McDonald had come at them with a knife. The resulting protest after the footage was released helped to fuel the then-growing Black Lives Matter movement. An officer in the shooting has been charged with murder. Of course he would be. McCarthy was fired by Mayor Rahm Emanuel earlier this year. There's a guy who should be taken out in the Pacific someplace and put on an island. Rob Emanuel. Crime has soared in Chicago in the last year, with 3,500 reported shootings in the city and the murder rate topping 750. That is the highest number in two decades and a 58% increase over the previous year. McCarthy said that there was a direct connection between the rising crime rate and the movement. There has been a political atmosphere of anti-police sentiment, which is basically anti-white. Yes, it is. It's tied together. That has swept across the country over the last few years. See, the whites don't... There's still millions of whites don't understand that. They say, you know, dump it all on the white cops. The simplest way to describe it is that we have created an environment where we have emboldened criminals and we are hamstringing the police. This is creating a state of lawlessness, which has been around a long time. Well, one thing you find out that most of the homicides by police are committed by black cops. Nobody wants to talk about that. He added that this was leading to an increase in shootings of police officers as well. He argued that the movement was encouraging young people, jerks, young people, not to comply with the police and legitimizing that of noncompliance. McCarthy was careful to say that there have been cases where police were responsible for unwarranted and tragic shootings in Chicago and elsewhere. What about the black cops who've done this? Cops have to do a better job, he said. But how can they do a better job? But he argued that the reaction to those cases should not be what drives law enforcement policy. Less than half of 1% of all the shootings in this city involve police officers shooting civilians. Wow. And that's that. Just remember, equality is a lie. A filthy, dirty lie. And as long as you fall into the trap of believing in equality, especially of the races, you can't win. You'll totally lose all the time. And that's it for today, boys and girls. I'll be back tomorrow, Tuesday, for another session. In the meanwhile, you know what? The chaos factor rules. Chaos factor rules. 14.5.
Still, great sun, so bright. Unify our world, our shoes placed together in harmony. We are one. Rebirth of the sun.